It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. Just turning 6 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 27th of August, 2025. Looking out the window here at the mountaintop in Letterkenny, and it's a dull one. And the rain's on. We need the rain. We need the water. If we can turn that into tap water, fantastic stuff. But you can see a bit of a change, and it's going to stick around with us for the next few days. But for some, it'll be welcome. But it's sunny side out for us here in the 9 till noon show. We've got 3 hours of keeping you up to date with the very latest news, getting in behind those headlines, listening to the views of people across the Northwest or wherever they may be listening, and chatting to those people as well, whether it's exposing an issue that needs to be addressed, or in fact, maybe it is celebrating some good news. We do it all here in the 9 till noon show. We want your involvement, of course. 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp and text. 086 60 25,000. If you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25,000, and emails come into us at comments@highlandradio.com. The Finn Valley Voice is out today, and they talk of a population collapse in Derry Donegal. The population of Ireland, north and south, has rocketed since the millennium from a joint 5.5 million to over 7 million in just 20 years. Derry and Donegal aren't invited to the party, though. Since 2011, Derry, Strabane and Donegal, taken as a region, have scarcely moved in terms of population. In Derry, Strabane, the population grew by only 1.8% between 2011 and 2022. In Donegal, the figure was 3.7%, the lowest in the 26 counties. And even that modest figure was preceded by a drop in population at the beginning of the millennium. The figures come from a new joint census completed by the CSO and the Northern Ireland Statistics and Research Agency. More on the front of and inside that paper today. The free paper Letterkenny Live is out as well. Atlantic Technological University has welcomed the strong response from homeowners and landowners, landlords, I beg your pardon, across the West and Northwest since the launch of its accommodation appeal on August 1st. Thanks to the support of communities in Galway, Mayo, Sligo and Donegal, more than 400 student beds have already been made available for the upcoming academic year. And that's quite significant because I think it's good for homeowners, landlords as well, because they can get up to €14,000 tax-free in renting a room out to a student who they can know a little bit about in advance or lay down the law in advance. And for some people, that could be the difference between keeping the head above water and not. There's more on population and the movement of people in the Nationals. We'll go to the Irish Times for this. And the number of people who've immigrated to Ireland fell by 16% in the year to April to 125,300, according to the data from the Central Statistics Office. So immigration is coming in. It was the fourth successive 12-month period where more than 100,000 people immigrated to the state, but the first fall in the total since 2020. Of the total, 31,500 were returning Irish citizens. So of the, just because this is quite important information, of the 125 people that came back to Ireland in the year covered by these stats, 31,500 were returning Irish citizens. 25,300 were EU citizens, so they are citizens of other EU countries and we can all move freely around the EU. 4,900 were UK citizens, with the remaining 63,000 coming from other countries. The state's population increased by 78,300 in the same period to 5.46 million people. Some 65,600 people departed the state in the 12 months to April, a 6% decrease on the same period a year earlier. And what we do have, generally speaking, and we've had it for generations, is a certain amount of Irish leaving, and they're often very young, and we know the impact that can have on populations and what have you. But a lot of Irish people return as well. And speaking of people are leaving Ireland for Australia in the highest numbers since 2013. In the 12 months to April, 13,500 left for the country. That's a 27% increase on the same period last year and 187% rise on 2023. So that's massive, isn't it? 13,500 descending into Australia. Now, as I say, if you look at the overall figures in terms of Irish people emigrating and returning, there's a slightly more emigrating than is returning, but it's the country isn't emptying out because other people come back, but they are probably of a different age demographic and what have you. The Irish Independent reports today that teachers and principals have been warned not to do school secretaries or caretakers work during the indefinite strike from tomorrow. And we're going to be talking about this shortly on the show, as more than 2,000 secretary and caretakers are preparing for industrial action in a bid to get public sector pension entitlements. They also want better sick pay and bereavement leave arrangements. In a message to members, Teachers Union of Ireland General Secretary Michael Gillespie claimed the Department of Education had suggested the boards of management could ask teachers to undertake the strikers' work. He said this would be utterly unacceptable and risked being a dangerous precedent. And we'll get into the reasons behind this. The quick read of it as effectively is you've got some caretakers, some secretaries employed directly by the Department of Education, and they receive holiday pay, for an example, and other benefits. Then others are employed a different way, and they have to effectively sign on in the summer or in Easter. They can be a long time without money and they don't get the same level of entitlement. That was the quick take as it used to be. I'm sure things haven't changed dramatically, but as I say, we'll tease that out a little bit more. Also at the front of the Irish Times, by the way, wish to reference that a very, very famous hotel in Donegal, the four-star waterfront hotel on Donegal's Wild Atlantic Way, goes to the market. It's in the property section here, which I had opened, but I've lost now. A commercial property, where are we? Yeah. Just over 10 years on from his acquisition of the Donegal Hotel, Osna Rossen, owner Kevin Boyle, has instructed joint agents Savile and TDL Horizons to find a buyer for the property. A popular venue over many decades among the community and visitors to the coastal town of Dunloe, Osna Rossen closed during the economic downturn and remained shuttered for several years before the Chicago-based businessman stepped in and purchased it for an undisclosed sum in 2015. The businessman's decision to buy the property was inspired in a large part by his memories of visiting the hotel as a boy with his late father, Patrick, who had emigrated from Dunloe to the US some years earlier. Much has changed under Mr. Boyle's ownership, and today the Waterfront Hotel is now known, as it's now known, comprises 49 newly refurbished ensuite bedrooms and 16 spacious suites, which will be completed under new ownership. A large bar, a restaurant with views of the Atlantic, a spacious a function room, the Inish fitness gym, and extensive grounds with car parking and a playground. It's on the market for $4.5 million. So lovely that if that changes hands. It's a lovely, lovely hotel, it has to be said. If I bought it, I don't have $4.5 million. There's a wee part of the bar that juts out. I think I would get rid of that. Other than that, it's perfect. The Irish Daily Mail vigilante group is targeting iPass Centre workers. This is the front page of a national newspaper. They say they're revealing this story. Of course, we talked about this a week or 2 weeks ago, rather controversially. Some thought we shouldn't. Others thought it important to have the conversation. But anyway, I'll read what they're writing, and these are the paper's words. A group calling themselves iPass Hunters are waging a campaign of harassment and intimidation against people working in the immigration sector, the Irish Daily Mail can reveal. The group is boasting about using heavy-handed tactics against iPass operators and their staff, as well as those working at construction sites, and have even advocated following people to their homes and carrying out protests there. The vigilante-style group is not only targeting those who own the accommodation, but people employed by them, their spouses and their children. Personal details, including photos, names, addresses and pictures of their homes, have all been published online in an apparent intimidation tactic that's causing great distress to those being targeted, the Mail understands. Gardaí are aware of the emerging trend, which is the significant part of the story, potentially. And it's understood they have been called to various locations, including Donegal, Monaghan, Laois and Dublin. The Department of Justice described the intimidation as totally unacceptable and has urged any victims to contact Gardaí, saying there is no place in society for vigilantism. So that's the Department of Justice, and they're encouraging victims victims, and the iPass hunters perhaps wouldn't see them as victims to contact the Gardaí. Social media firms X and Meta, which own Facebook, have removed posts on foot of complaints, but those behind the sinister campaign, as it's described, soon start new pages under different names. So, as I say, that's a story we covered some time ago, hitting the national headlines right about now. Incredibly sad news recorded across the papers this morning, and this is the death of two young people. They died after attending a music festival at the weekend. Tipperary native Mia Keevan, 17, passed away in hospital after the Emerge Festival in Belfast's Boucher playing fields on Sunday, and young lad Trey Keenan, 24, became ill and died a few hours after attending the same festival. Two other people, a woman in her 80s and a teenaged boy, were also taken to hospital after falling ill at the fest, which took place over 2 days. In an update last night, the PSNI revealed an investigation is ongoing into Mia's death. It was also confirmed 7 arrests were made over the 2 days of the music event. And it's a joyous occasion heading away to a music festival, especially if you're young, but not so young. It depends how young you are in yourself. And I know there are probably thousands heading down to Electric Picnic. I don't know the circumstances of these young people's deaths, but have an amazing, amazing time. But just be extra careful. You never know what's knocking about the place. Enoch Burke is back at school. He's back in the papers. Gender row teacher, as is described, Enoch Burke was yesterday back at the school he was sacked from as he slammed the government for taking every penny of his. Burke could be facing another spell of imprisonment as he once again showed up to Wilson's Hospital School in Westmeath as the new term began after the summer holidays. He was dismissed because he and his religious beliefs prevented him from addressing a pupil as they. Well, that's not exactly why he was dismissed. He was dismissed over a raising his concerns with management. The former German and history teacher returned to the school on Thursday as it reopened for incoming first-year students. Speaking to the Irish Daily Star outside the campus yesterday, Mr. Burke got emotional as he said, "This is where I should be today. Not only do I have to stand in the corridor and be stopped from teaching and doing my duty, but my salary is being stripped of me. I still get paid. I have it in my pocket here, my payslip. I'm still on the payroll. This is my salary. This is what I'm entitled to. Every penny of this is being diverted from my accounts because of the Attorney General, Rosa Fanning, of this government." So he turned up for school again, and he even brought a wee satchel with him and everything. And lastly, one in four women listening to this show may well be impacted by this. And it's in the Irish Daily Mirror. It's a long read. I can't read it all. But more and more Irish women are suffering from hair loss, a comprehensive new survey has revealed. One in four females here struggle with hair loss and don't know what to do about it. The Petermark online survey of 1,443 women aged 18 to 65 plus from July to August showed hair loss in women generally includes excessive shedding, thinning hair, bald patches and receding hairlines. Hair experts at Petermark say thinning hair or hair loss is a growing problem for Irish women, with more than a quarter worried about it and a fifth unhappy with their hair. So maybe that's something we can revisit. We cover that from time to time here, but it's very, for some, if not most, it's very distressing. So we have to make sure, I suppose, that we talk about things that could be helpful to people. Good morning, Greg and all the team. Can you give a shout out to little Lily Dunleavy starting first day at school? Love from Granny Dolores. Have a lovely first day. More than happy to do that for you, Dolores. Now, we mentioned this on the show earlier. You may have heard the promos, but I think it's important to give it a read out. We are really, I suppose, asking you to support local businesses. For the most part, our local businesses are fantastic. They're there when we need them. They're often there when we need help with fundraisers. They employ our kids. They employ our mums and dads. You know, they are the lifeblood of a community. And they provide not only great products, but they also provide excellent service in most cases. And we have our annual customer service awards open right now, where it's an opportunity for you to celebrate a business close to you. It doesn't matter if it employs 300 people, or it doesn't matter if it's a coffee dock with two people. They're all treated equal in this competition, and it's based on their customer service. And if you are a business as well, by the way, go onto our website because we have some wee templates there and invite people to vote for your business, because we can't presume that we reach everybody here. And there's, it is time where we have to promote ourselves as well as wait for others to say, you know, whether they like what we're doing or not. So if you've got a favourite business anywhere in Donegal, from Bundoran to Malin, and everywhere in between, and you feel that they go, they are the go-to for exceptional customer service, well, it's time to recognise them now by nominating them in the Highland Radio Customer Services Awards. And we're running it this year in association with the excellent McIlhenny Department Store. So if you want to nominate a business, go onto our website and you'll see it on the landing page there, highlandradio.com. Click in. There are a number of categories, and all businesses in the hospitality sector will be, not hospitality sector, sorry, but in the customer services sector will be in there. And if not, there's drop-down menus, so on and so forth. And nominate your favourite business. It only takes a couple of minutes, even less. Nominations close on Monday, the 8th of September. We had over 70,000 interactions and votes last year, and we'd love to match and exceed that. So if there's a business local to you and you believe their customer service requires, needs, deserves recognition, and the last one's the most important, of course, get onto the website, highlandradio.com, and even, you know, getting onto the shortlist, as we know ourselves with the IMRO Radio Awards, even getting onto the shortlist is an amazing achievement in these awards. Such is the amazing customer services across so many businesses across our beautiful county. So check it out, highlandradio.com. Now we're talking about Bus Erin and school bus places. And we're going to hear Sarah's story specifically, of course, in relation to that. We've already reached out to Bus Erin and are putting the pressure on in relation to this. We don't always wait till the listener comes on air. So hopefully we'll know what the crack is before too long. But Sarah, good morning to you. Thanks so much for joining me. And I'm sorry you're in this situation.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Right. Tell us the story, Sarah.
Okay, so we are, like many of people in Donegal and Inishowen, we are knocking our house down this year, hopefully, if we ever secure a contractor in a very difficult time. We were forced to move to temporary accommodation because we couldn't get a place to stay close to our home when the rebuild is happening. So we're about 17 kilometres away from where we live and where our children got a bus. Yeah,
before you get on there, Sarah, I think that's actually quite an important thing. I think people who aren't affected by this often think that if someone has to move out of their home, they move into a house next door. But that's not the reality. You have to find a place. And in your case, it's 17 kilometres away, which is quite a distance and a huge upheaval. Sorry to interrupt on that, Sarah. I just think, you know, that's quite a significant part of this DCB controversy that we don't often hear about. But obviously, as you were about to say, this is ramifications because you could be moving away from work, family, but we're focusing on school.
Yeah. So the move has been really difficult for the kids because they have moved away from like three sets of cousins that lived on the doorstep that now they don't play with every day because they're not there, who they walk to the school bus with every morning. So it will be a big upheaval whenever they go back to school in September. But we applied for the school bus seats the same as we do every year in around March, and were refused the service from where we are, even though had we put in that we wanted our kids to go to Mayville, to the Irish language school or the national school, which is the local Protestant National School, they would have been able to get a place. But because our kids go to the local Catholic National School, and there is one in Greencastle, which is closer to us, they can't get a place. And the bus actually goes straight past our front door and goes straight to Mayville. It's a 2-minute walk from either one of the schools that it provides the service to, but our kids can't get on it. And I just don't get where the fairness in that is. Had they gone to the other two schools, there would be no issue with this. But the expectation that you would take them out of a school and send them to a school that's closer to us while we're only here, hopefully for a year, and completely disrupt their life even more, it just doesn't make sense. But it's like everything in the scheme, like we've seen it in the campaign, you were trying to offer very simple solutions, Michael Doherty said it earlier this week. It's deliberate and it feels like it's slow. And now it feels like it's actually deliberate and planned. And we're now seeing the outworkings mm-hmm. of how that is impacting everybody. And this is just one thing. You know, this just school bus. Anybody else is probably thinking, well, sure, they could go to Greencastle, but it's how it impacts everything around how the kids, what the kids will remember from it.
I don't think anyone listening, and particularly with school-going children, would think that you're being unreasonable here. You know, as a family, you're going through an absolute nightmare, what no one should ever have to go through. You did absolutely nothing wrong, and because of many reasons, your house is falling down. You've managed to secure a accommodation, and it's 17 kilometres away. This whilst hoping to progress to get back into your own house, but you've already sort of hinted at you're going through that process of trying to get a contractor and all that type of stuff and seeing how the numbers all add up, which in and of itself is stressful. And we try and insulate our children from that as much as possible. And one simple way in your situation would be for them to get on a bus that passes the front door to go to the school that they're familiar with, the friends that they're familiar with. It's not a big ask, and I don't think it's in any way unreasonable. And I'd be shocked, Sarah, if anyone thought that, you know, this wouldn't be the right logical and sensible thing to do for children particularly, but in a family in a very difficult situation.
Yeah, you would think that, but, I mean, I knew as soon as nothing came back as of this week that nothing, that we hadn't secured seats for them. And I know that there have been a number of councillors in touch with Bus Éireann. Bus Éireann have made an ask to the Department of Education to try and secure the accommodation or secure the seats on the bus. And there's been no response. And it was like this in the campaign. When we were doing anything and we were trying to get anything from the Department of Housing, you had to go on Highland Radio, make sound bites and then share it. Instead of people just trying to help people, have to shout and scream about it the whole time. So it's not easy at all.
No, of course it's not. But listen, we're putting the pressure on Bus Éireann from our end. There's no logic to this. And, you know, the school bus system has shown a great deal of flexibility in recent years, and I think this is not even flexibility, this is just common sense, to give your kids a seat on a bus so that they can return to the school that hopefully they'll be living beside in a year, you know, with a good tailwind and if everything goes your way. Right, leave it with us, Sarah. Yeah. I don't want to keep raking over it. You've made it very, very clear from the get-go. As I say, we're doing everything we can behind the scenes, and I hope Bus Éireann will come up trumps for us, but we shall see, because Monday is just around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very
All right.
much, Greg.
Now, leave it with us, Sarah. Best wishes to you, Charlie, and the family there. Hi, today is the first day back at school, says a listener, in leaving cert year. She has special transport due to a disability. No bus arrived to take her. Then we phone the school transport and they don't have a clue what's going on, and we may or may not receive a call next week about it. Right, what's going on there? Also, I note some schools down the country were having funding issues with school meals. And I'm not sure if it's relevant up here, but I did note that some schools in other counties, I believe it were national schools, the school meal scheme is not operational from the get-go because of funding issues with the Department of Education. It might be very local to the particular area I'm referencing, but just curious out there as people are heading back to school, are there any issues in relation to school meals? Any other issues in relation to school transport as well? I hope in this case it's just a case of, you know, maybe new tenders went out and, you know, people are new to runs and it could be an oversight and everything will be resolved. I do hope that's the case in your case, but keep us updated. And if there's anything we can do in terms of trying to address that issue, we will try and do it. And as I say, on behalf of Sarah, we're also putting the pressure on Bus Éireann because it's Wednesday today. The kids start on Monday. Look at the bus passes their house. Bus Éireann can get some good PR here. Get the kids on the bus, get them to the school, as I say, that hopefully they'll be back attending if they get their house rebuilt in the not-too-distant future. Fingers crossed. I hope I'm not naive, but I feel positive about a potential outcome to that one. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Chemotherapy that can reduce the risk of breast cancer returning after surgery is not being given to many patients on time. And unfortunately, in Donegal at Letterkenny University Hospital, the figures are poor. Maria Delaney's an editor of the Journal, and she's going to be joining us with her details of her investigation after these. Now, as I mentioned, Maria Delaney is editor of the Journal Investigates and joins me now. Good morning, Maria. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Greg, for having me on.
Right. Now, you have been looking into chemo after breast surgery. And unfortunately, what you found is really quite significant delays. And unfortunately, once again, our local hospital, Letterkenny University Hospital, or the patients that attend there, is top of the pile for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, so I was on a couple of weeks ago about overall chemo, and Letterkenny was ranking as the kind of slowest in terms of patients not getting chemo on time there. Unfortunately, it's the same again. So Letterkenny had the worst rating for this. It was 13% of patients with breast cancer after surgery, so this is key, it's after surgery, got their chemo within the 8-week target that the HSC has set, and that was the lowest in the first quarter of 2025. They weren't much better before that. It was 20% for the whole of 2024, a bit better in 2023, 48%. They did tell me that they were 40% in the latest quarter, that's April to June 2025, but still well below. You're supposed to have over 90% of patients meeting that target.
Yeah, so we know too the distress this causes, because people are on what they hope to be a treatment journey. The cancer cut out of them, they might feel that that's the case. That's a big step and can be really quite distressing, as you can imagine. And then you think, right, I want to get straight into this here. I want to start the therapies to you know, give me the best chance of a long-term survival, more effective treatment. But in the period we're talking about here, 87% have that anxiety of what's going on. Why am I not getting it in the time period that's, you know, set out there? And then we hear, and it's important not to alarm, but we have to highlight the fact, we hear from consultant medical oncologist Dr. Michael McCarthy talking of the implications of delayed treatment.
Yeah, so timing is really crucial when it comes to this particular type of treatment, because if it's done in time, there's a potential cure of the cancer. So the reason for this, it's called adjuvant chemotherapy, is often that it'll prevent the cancer coming back, especially if there's been a kind of what they might call a curative surgery where the tumour and all maybe surrounding tissue is removed. So hopefully they're hoping for a cure. Now, the issue is, like oncologist Dr. Michael McCarthy told me, that if there are delays, there's a higher chance of the cancer coming back, and it can result in worse survival outcomes, and the potential benefits reduce over time. So for example, if the adjuvant therapy is delayed by around 12 weeks after surgery, he said there's probably no benefit to it, yet you will get the side effects. So I think that is the issue there, that timing is really crucial when it comes to post-surgery chemotherapy. Some other types of chemotherapy or immunotherapy might be used to kind of stem the cancer or stop it progressing. But this particular one can actually be curative, so you're hoping for a very successful outcome. And if it's not done on time, those benefits can be reduced.
Yeah, just to quote him directly, in general, across all cancer types, if you don't get around to starting adjuvant therapy within certainly 12 weeks of having your surgery, there's probably no benefit to the therapy, but you would still obviously have the impacts of that therapy. I mean, that is, you know, it's worrying, isn't it? It's worrying.
Yeah.
Is there any explanation? Sorry, go ahead, please.
No, I was just going to say, like, it's especially worrying. Like, I'm actually based up here in Donegal myself. I'm near Dunloe, so it's an hour to the hospital as it is in Letterkenny. But I suppose it's especially worrying up here in the Northwest, because access to private care is very limited. So, for instance, I spoke to Margaret Higgins, who is based in Leinster, and she was saying that she was given a wait of, now this isn't the matter, it wasn't in Letterkenny, but she was given a wait of 16 weeks for her chemotherapy after surgery. And she actually went to private consultants within a week, saw a consultant and started chemo the next day. Now, that option is a lot more difficult for people in Donegal, where they'd have to either, where I am, I know there's flights for cancer and those kind of great initiatives, but those things are a lot more complicated and a lot more costly for people. They might have to go to a private clinic and stay there. So, and also obviously you need private health insurance for those. Like, her treatment cost €27,000. If she hadn't had private health insurance, that would be out of the, just too much money altogether. So I think that's the issue here in the Northwest, that those kind of extra services wouldn't be as readily available.
You know, and these delays are potentially too on top of the delays of getting that surgery in the first place. And I have absolutely zero doubt it's not because of the enthusiasm and determination of the team down there that perform the surgeries, but it's about them being allowed to do it, and it's about them getting the theatre time to do that. So in some of these cases, this could be delay on top of delay. What concerns me, though, is the fluctuation. It all concerns me. 13% to 40%, up and down, up and down. It must be based on the overcrowding more generally in the hospital, one would have to imagine. I don't think it's harmful me to presume that, but I mean, why is this great fluctuation?
Yeah, it's unclear about that, to be honest, it's because we weren't given the actual patient numbers, so it's unclear if there was more cancer patients or less cancer patients. Letterkenny University Hospital, I did ask them about the non-compliance with this target, and they said that a dedicated four tiered area within the inpatient oncology ward was being designated as a kind of an extension for these therapies, and that increased capacity and enhanced the hospital's ability to deliver care. So that's what they were attributing to the 40% in the latest quarter. And they also said that there's going to be development of a new two-theatre surgical hub, which includes 30 daycare oncology chairs, which is 15 new and 15 replacement. Again, unclear when that'll happen.
But it is actually, you know, the one thing that is encouraging at this point is we are talking now about the surgery hub. Obviously, we had the Minister for Health confirming that. There was a great deal of controversy on that. So at least there is something that we can keep pushing towards. But you're quite right. We don't have a timeline on that yet. And also to 40%, from 13 to 40%, wow, okay, it's tripled. That's still 6 out of 10 women who aren't receiving their treatment when they should receive it. With that 12 weeks, whereby, according to that professional you spoke to, beyond that, the treatment perhaps becomes ineffectual. So, you know what I mean? It's still 6 out of 10 women that are already distressed. Their families are distressed. And I think sometimes we don't, maybe we all know, I say some, but maybe we all know how distressful this is for people around cancer sufferers as well. It's not the individual. It's so many people.
Yeah,
around them.
And I've spoken to people with cancer, and they said, like, it was about Margaret Higgins, who I mentioned earlier. She said the anxiety was crippling, not only for her, but her family. She had been told that if she gets, that she needed chemo within a certain time to increase her survival. So, and most people with cancer they'd be very upfront about this, because surgeons or oncologists do want people to get this, but obviously it's the capacity there that isn't there for them. So patients are aware that their survival is potentially decreasing the more weeks they wait. I suppose one of the big issues here seems to be around funding and the ability of hospitals to allocate extra staff for themselves or fund things. And Dr. Michael McCarthy, who spoke about earlier, he said that he's been seeing bad KPIs for years, but there isn't any direct link between KPIs and resource allocation or funding allocation. And that hospitals are kind of strangled in some cases by the HSC, and they might say, well, we're really struggling in this area, but the HSC might say back, well, do what you can, there's no extra funding. So I think that's a big issue. Like the National Cancer Care Control Programme said that hospitals are expected to proactively monitor their performance and escalate concerns and implement appropriate local mitigation strategies. But the issue is that hospitals are kind of maximising their efficiency in terms of there's always bums on these daycare seats. If someone cancels, they ring someone immediately straight away to fill them back in. So there's only so much that the hospital staff, and you know yourself, like staff in Letterkenny University Hospital are working at absolutely maximum capacity. So there's only so much they can do without that investment.
Yeah, I know. But when you hear of, sorry, this is just a separate point, you know, the delays, the targets and breast check not being met, which is how we get people into this process. Then we hear of around the country, surgeons, you know, fighting to get patients onto the operating table. There are delays there, and restriction as to when people who want to work can work. And you hear these stories all over the place. And then the treatment delays as well. And it's delay after delay after delay, unfortunately. Maria, listen, great work as always. Thank you very much for coming on and explaining that to us. And, you know, we talked of these four chairs that they've been fighting for years. It's crazy. It's four chairs, right? But planning and all this kind of stuff. And it had to go higher up the HSE chain to make space for these chairs. Crazy stuff. We had Rosina Toner and others campaigning hard in relation to that. But other than the surgical hub, which we do hope does come to fruition, the hospital in the statement to you, I know you were reading some of that and I ignorantly cut across you, they're not really offering any solutions between now and the surgical hub other than flagging these extra chairs, or did I miss something in that statement?
No, I'll just double check it here. But no, the main thing was the dedicated four chaired area that is now helping with the current cancer care. Yeah, they didn't say anything, any kind of transition between those extra 50 and you. So yeah, it's unclear when there will be kind of, I suppose, appropriate capacity for these treatments. And if people, like, it's not only women, I know in this particular case, it's women with breast cancer, but also, as we know, it's affecting all different types of cancer when they're waiting for these type of treatments.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks so very much indeed. I do appreciate your time. That is Maria Delaney, who's editor of the journal Investigates. The journal.ie, of course, is an online platform, and you can check that article out in full there. Another story that we have been covering extensively, of course, and hopefully we were a platform for the voices of parents, is Little Angels. And we were sent some information that was sent to parents, and I'll read what it says. Dear parents, we've been given the keys of the new school and we've begun the process of moving. There is still considerable work to be done on the current site to make it safe for the pupils to return, and there is considerable work to be done to get us into the new school. We're awaiting confirmation from school governance in relation to a delayed start back. As soon as we have further information, we'll be in touch. We appreciate your patience and support as we negotiate this transition, which has unfortunately happened at a time we wouldn't have chosen. Now, we were saying right from the get-go here that these decisions as it relates to Little Angels needed to be made way, way, way back in order for everything to be put in place to allow the school open in a timely fashion for pupils. Unfortunately, there was delay after delay after delay. A solution was eventually found, it would seem. But now we have a situation that there's a delay for students in returning to school. That's my reading of it. I'm going to be joined actually by Councillor Thomas Sean Devine, who's has a child at Little Angels, but of course has also been making representations as an elected rep, and I'll speak to him after these messages. Back on April the 11th, it was announced that Little Angels Schools in Letterkenny, a resolution to capacity issues at the school has been found. 10 pupils, you might remember, were told that they wouldn't have a place at the new state-of-the-art school building come September as it was too small. But at that time, Junior Minister with responsibility for special education and inclusion, Michael Moynihan, confirmed that following intensive engagement and in agreement with the HSE, four modular classrooms from the current site will be used to accommodate all pupils. Now, news of capacity issues broke way, way, way back in February. And at that time, it was being made very clear that a decision needed to be made on this pronto to ensure that the school could open on time. But it took until April, and then the wheels began to move ever more slowly. And parents now are somewhat in the dark. Councillor Thomas Sean Devine is one of those parents, also obviously a local elected rep. So I presume you received this circular from the school. What does it mean?
Greg, good morning, and morning to your listeners. Yes, we received that message yesterday from the school regarding about the opening on Monday, and it could be a delayed opening. You know, something not good enough. Greg, 5 days out from school opening, they received that message. That school has laid dormant all summer, the new school. I've been at it several times over the last couple of weeks, and the old school needs to get in contact to see what was happening, because we were, none of us has been informed through the school our change teacher's going to be in September and what, you know, and every other year we usually know if it's the same teacher or if they're moving class to a different teacher, whatever, but this year it's been nothing. There's no communication, Greg, with any of the parents. I've been speaking to teachers yesterday, SNAs in the school. They're even on limbo what's happening for Monday, and that's just not good enough. The buses, everybody's the same.
Greg, so there's no school Monday, and you don't know when the children will be back at school?
Yeah. That go with this message, Greg, that we're expecting another message about a delayed opening. I think you've read it out there, Greg, just before your wee break.
I did, yeah.
And that was the message we received, and it was, you know, it could be a delayed opening.
Nobody well, let me
knows,
just read that again. We are awaiting confirmation from school governance in relation to a delayed start back. As soon as we've got further information, we'll be in touch. That's, I mean, obviously, whomever sent this, they're working off limited information. That's incredibly open-ended. Yeah. Who's responsible for this? Who's Greg, in charge? Not a person.
You see, Greg, I'll tell you what's wrong, Greg. There's no board in that school for over 2 years. That's just not good enough, Greg. It's one of the first things when we get back here in September. It's one of the first things they're going to try and get reinstated is a board in that school up there and the Parents Association. As in the Parents Association, we haven't met in over a year. Mm. And if the Parents Association is there and the board's there, Greg, these things wouldn't be happening. There's a direct dialogue then where people can get answers, where people can go and get communication from. We have nothing at the moment. And that's simply not good enough, Greg. No disrespect to the school principal, or whoever's running that governance, or wherever that's just coming from, because we don't know where this is coming from. I've contacted Charlie Ward's office yesterday to try and get in touch with the department to see what's happening here. And with them response back, I've just been in touch with Charlie just before I come on air to see if there's a response has come back. Nobody knows, Greg, and that's governance. We don't know where.
But this has been running for this has been running for a bit. So we are now towards the end of August. Okay, Leonard Watson, who's another parent representative, he talked of, and this was way back in June. He talked about concerns that the school might not open September. Let's have a quick listen.
At the end of the day, when there's ever extra staff being brought into a school, it is good news. We have to be grateful, but I still think the big story is the school's still not open yet. You know, I met with Minister McConnell Ogle last week, and he is guarantees the school will be open in September, but this school should have been open a couple of months ago too. Like, so it's frustrating that way on for parents, and that, you know, we were told maybe in February our children would be going up, and it's now June and no child has been in the school. So I say it is good news, but still there's still a lot of work to do, even around. There's three or four therapist posts that haven't been filled yet, you know. So it's things like this here, like even actually a functioning board in the school. We haven't had a functioning board in 2 years. I think a functioning board would actually maybe move these things on quicker.
So the reason I wanted to play that interview is because it talks to the fact that parents knew back in June, even though they'd received a commitment from Charlie McConnell that the school would be open in September, they knew, and Leonard knew quite rightly, what the problems were. And even though that was at a time where two new additional teaching posts had been created, he knew at that time that, hold on a second, September could be a problem. It shouldn't be down to the teacher, the parents, Thomas.
Leonard's 110% correct in what he's saying there, you know. And that has been relayed probably long before even June. The problems that's great. Like, that school has long over delayed from being finished or whatever, or works being carried out. That's been long delayed. We've known, Greg, over 2 years ago that the school was too small. Mm-hmm. We've actually asked if the Parents Association could be pushed in to get the extension built whenever the school's been built, instead of doing it whenever pupils are in the school, then further down along the lane. There's a teacher had left there. That post wasn't refilled. Now the post is filled. Now we need more SNAs, which apparently has only been advertised for last week. But the delay, Greg, is far, far too long.
Yeah, all right.
And
okay.
Leonard rightfully says it.
Yeah, go ahead.
And if Leonard rightfully says there's no functioning board up there. And if there had been a functioning board, Greg, I think a lot of these issues we wouldn't even be talking about today.
Thomas, listen, thanks very much for your time. I must break for the news. Obviously, this is a story we're going to stay very much on top of and try and force answers for parents. They simply don't know what the story is. They don't know when that school will open. And as I say, these concerns are well flagged.